Hey everyone, what's up? It's the second episode of This Week on Cinematics. Last episode, we covered all the movies that are coming up that we've seen for the week of Friday, April 12th. For this mini episode, we have two interviews from Eric Holmes, and we have a bunch of our recommendations. First off, Eric Holmes, I'm going to put these two interviews at the end, tail end of this episode. What can you tell us about the first of these episodes, your interview with Alexis Gambis for La Bocine?
Alexis Gambis, I believe.
Yes, I apologize. La Bocine.
I always ask them how to say their names when I don't know, and they always say it out loud. So there's that. Sometimes like I'll look up interviews with people if I don't know how to pronounce their name, and the interviewer never says their name. They never say their name. So I'm like, I'm just going to say their name, have them say their name. So at least it's out there. Yeah. Alexi started La Bocine. It's basically a streaming service, and it's kind of trying to meld science with filmmaking in weird ways. I believe it's like $3 a month or $30 for the whole year. And it's like kind of an experimental thing that they're doing. And so kind of appreciated that.
Yeah. On labocine.com, the main title here, it's a cinema from the science new wave. Alexi is the creator of La Bocine, and he's trying to start this science new wave movement.
Yes, it sir. Said that I was confused, and I can't remember. I believe I had him clarify that it's not new wave science, like acupuncture and crystals. It's not like that. It's like actual science. But yeah, when you say new wave science, you get a different picture in your head of what
I just
it
assumed
actually
it was Thomas Dolby blinding you with it.
So. No. So this movement is called Science New Wave. It's on labocine.com, and it is inspired by the French Nouvelle Vague, aka the French New Wave. So Science New Wave was exactly like Eric was saying, a sort of scientific storytelling intermixed with cinema. So bringing that type of storytelling into the world of cinema. If you want to listen to it, we'll be at the tail end of this episode with Alexi Gambis, Eric Holmes?
Yes.
Okay. Maybe. So, and then I'll put the link to labocine.com on our show notes. What is the second interview you did this week?
The director of In Flames. We covered it on the main show, and to interview the director, Zarar Khan. And we just kind of go over basically the movie and kind of some of the more kind of the thoughts behind the themes of In Flames and where those came from and how they put it to screen. Pretty basic stuff, but I mean, I would definitely recommend watching the movie. I don't think we really get into spoilers. Listen to the interview and maybe that'll inform you while watching the movie, or go vice versa. I think either one would be fine.
Yeah, Zarar Khan in the interview, he talks about living in Pakistan for quite a while, and he's obviously, this movie In Flames is set in Pakistan. Currently, Zarar Khan lives in Toronto. Towards the end of the interview, he talked to Eric about how living in Toronto has changed for him as a moviegoer, because now he gets to see movies he wants to see in the local cinema, where in Pakistan he had to watch on his laptop. Yes, Eric.
That was an interesting question. In Flames was the submitted as the Pakistan International for the Oscars, and I was always curious of how that happened. He goes into pretty heavy detail on how that process, and even the fact that it's kind of half Pakistan, half Canadian production, the headaches they had to go through with that. And that, you know, for a short interview, he got a lot of info about that.
Yeah, some really good stuff for the In Flames interview. Again, tail end of this episode, you'll have the interview with Alexi Gambis for La Bocine. And then finally, the interview, Eric's interview with Zarar Khan, writer director of In Flames, specifically In Flames. It's one of the movies we covered. Both Eric and Bruce loved it. Hits theaters exclusively on Friday, April 12th. Now let's get to some recommendations for this week. These are movies that are not part of our features. Bruce, what do you got so far?
I have The First Omen, which just came out this last Friday. So every Saturday, usually my oldest son and I watch a movie, and a lot of times we just watch one at home, and it's either something silly or something fun or something I think he'd love. Like, you know, we watched some Tarantino recently. But the week before last, we watched the original Omen, and then we knew we were going to probably go watch this movie. So we went and watched it. This
original
movie
holds up? Sorry?
Does hold up. I mean, it's there's some cheesiness to it. It's got a little bit of Final Destination kind of, what do people say, Rube Goldberg deaths? Where, sure. You know. But I think it's a solid 70s horror movie that I think has a lot of fun to it. It's a good watch. And it's pretty lean. It kind of just does its thing. The First Omen is directed by Arkasha Stevenson, stars as Margaret, Nell Tiger, Free, and then also co-stars a lot of names you might know, Bill Nighy, Charles Dance, Sonia Braga, Ralph Ineson. So you've got some names in there. What this movie does is kind of interesting because and I didn't have a lot of hopes for this, although I've been hearing some good buzz about it. So I'm like, okay, maybe it'll be actually a good movie. We'll see. It might just be cheesy fun, whatever. So I went in there. It's a prequel, first of all, to the First Omen, or to the Omen that we saw back in the 70s. And it's directly leading to that. It isn't one of those ones where it's going to rewrite it, so it's going to be a totally different version or whatever. It's literally going to lead into that. And it starts with Margaret, and she's this young, soon-to-be nun going to this orphanage. And she's going to be actually, I don't know if they call it ordained. I don't know if they call it when you become a nun, but she's going to be married into the church, you know, because that's essentially what they do, right? Got to marry God there and become a nun. But she comes there to basically work in this orphanage for a little while and then become a nun. That's her whole idea. And what this movie does that I thought was kind of interesting, because instead of being like the other omens where essentially it's like, you know, you have the evil kid and then all the people around it start to learn about it and they all die in crazy creative ways, this is a little more akin to Giallo, you know, get your ears up a little bit there. A little more akin to Giallo, a little more akin to Suspiria in a sense, not in that really colorful, overly stylized sense, but in the sense of how in Suspiria she ever going to this overseas to a ballet school. And she gets there and it's like a weird situation she's in. Something's not right. Something's not right in this whole place. Same sort of thing here, right? She's going to this orphanage with all these nuns and something is obviously not right in this place. So there's that element of kind of mystery and weirdness there. I really appreciate the attention to like period detail. It's got a really good like atmospheric odd score. It's not just the choir score from the original Omens. It has its own thing going on. I'd say the first two thirds is almost a movie that doesn't even have to be called an Omen movie, but in the last third, it ties it all in almost to its detriment, almost like it's tasked to force itself into that where it almost could have not done that. But I understand why, you know, I understand they want to tie it in. It's part of a franchise. They're going to have a lot more recognition based on that. This is a solid horror movie. I would say if you like those kind of movies or you like specifically those movies, I'd say go check this out. And it doesn't shirk on having some good violence. It's not as violent, honestly, as the old ones as far as how many kills there are. But there are a few knockout scenes that'll get you going in this one as far as like, you know, the horror aspects.
Your son's review?
He liked it. He thought it was a really solid movie, kind of like I did. He liked it as a good, fun theater experience as well. And it's got a straight up homage to Possession. So he got to like that too.
That's amazing. Arkasha Stevenson, in the interview, when I interviewed her and her companion and writer, co-writer, Tim Smith, she mentioned body horror. Is that a big theme of this? Do they explore it pretty well or not too much?
I would call it almost pregnancy horror. So in the aspect that pregnancy is a sense of kind of body horror, right? Like your body's undergoing changes and you're being literally kind of possessed and all that kind of stuff. They push that. And for people who are squeamish around that, that would definitely be some triggering stuff in there. Cause you see some stuff, you're like, oh wow, they went there. So they do go there pretty, pretty hard. So yeah, a little bit in that sense.
Okay. So this is a very good review from Bruce. I was surprised. The First Omen, what is your rating?
I'm going to go 4 stars, and probably only because of the last third having to like shoehorn itself into that and also kind of not making sense a little bit. Although that's a minor quibble. If you're going for a horror movie, it's giving you what you want. It's way better than it needed to be. Put it that way.
So that is The First Omen from Bruce Berkey. 4 stars. That's amazing. I thought you would really not like this movie. And unfortunately, I told the filmmakers that I was going to see it opening weekend. Instead, I saw Monkey Man, which I'll get to in a second. But The First Omen, worth a watch. 4 stars from Bruce Berkey. Check it out in theaters. Next up is Monkey Man. Eric Holmes, you've already seen Monkey Man as well?
No, I'm watching Monkey Man and A Civil War this week.
Okay.
And Zone of Interest. I had to watch Hip Hop Witch. I didn't have time for all these movies that come out all the time.
We're going to get to the Hip Hop Witch in a couple of minutes. All I'm going to say about Monkey Man is directed by Dev Patel, and he plays a young man who is on a revenge mission after, as a child, he witnessed the murder of his mom amidst a bunch of corrupt officials. So his job is to, it's a caste, pretty much a class system in India. He is born poor and he continues to be poor, but within the underground, supposed quote, underground dregs of society, he rises up and learns the ways of, he'll do whatever it takes, no matter, take whatever job, as long as he can get into this very highly rich, powerful area community so he can unleash his vengeance as Monkey Man. So here's the thing about this movie. Very good action, but it is sort of false advertising. If you look at the trailer, you think there's wall-to-wall action. There is a lot of action in this movie, but most of the film is a lot of storytelling. You get learn about his backdrop and his relationship to his mother, his truth. Just, it's a lot of story. And I think some people might not like Monkey Man because it's not like there's even a reference to John Wick in the movie. It's not wall-to-wall John Wick action. It's just action that's spread out within a couple of moments. But I think ultimately this is a very character-driven movie and the ending is fantastic. I hope, I don't know if it's doing really well in the theaters right now, but I really hope there is another installment of Monkey Man because it's a really inspired work by Dev Patel, already a great actor, but a very great director as well. So again, I think the only people who might not like Monkey Man are going to complain, oh, there's just too much story. I wanted more action. But I think there was enough action and a lot of great story for me. My rating for Monkey Man is 4.5 stars. So 4.5 stars for Monkey Man currently in theaters. Bruce gave The First Omen 4 stars. We have some great recommendations for you guys. If you don't want to watch any of those movies that are coming out Friday, April 12th, these are all movies that are worth watching in theaters. If you don't want to go to theaters, you might want to actually stay home and see a movie that could be a classic film. That is called The Hip Hop Witch. Eric Holmes, what can you tell us about this movie that Joseph Bridges inflicted upon our Cinematics Facebook group and having a lot of other people within our Facebook group, including the crew at Middle Class Film Class, reviewed the Hip Hop Witch on one of their episodes, and you've decided to carry that mantle as well. What is The Hip Hop Witch?
You know, as a joke, when I see a movie I don't like, I'll say it was in focus as the only decent thing about it, but this wasn't even in focus most of the time. It's got let's see, it's got a bunch of rappers in it: Eminem, Vanilla Ice, Mobb Deep, Royce the 5'9, Outsiders, Vitamin C, Ja Rule. I don't know that the director and writer, it says there's a writer. I don't think there was. The hip hop which got me. But back in the day, some friends and I had a camcorder and we're like drinking and we're like, screw it, let's make a movie. And so we just kind of started filming scenes and kind of making it up as we went along. It was called Lick the Evil. I have a soft spot in my heart about it. It's not a good movie. It's just something we made to have fun. Like, if you guys watch it, you would probably get like 5 minutes in it thinking, man, how long has this been going on? Like 3 hours? It's something we did for fun. We like watching it, but we wouldn't unleash it onto the world to have other people watch it because it's a bunch of inside jokes and not very good. That's what the Hip Hop Witch is. Someone had a camcorder and a bunch of famous rappers. Didn't look up what year this came out at. I don't know how famous they were at the time. They were just coming up or what, but
2000.
oh, to the, yeah, I suppose Eminem was kind of coming up about then. So I think it was just they did it for, as a goof. I think it's called like the Hip Hop Witch Project. I think it's like the Blair Witch Project spoof. At least that's what the IMDb says. You have reporters going around from Hip Hop Witch TV, HHW TV, because that's the thing that you have. The story is stupid. A lot of the time, Bruce, I believe you said you saw part of it. A lot of it's Ja Rule going, man, the hip hop witch, man, she'd be coming around with that big ass and she got them green eyes and whatnot. And then they cut to someone else like, oh man, I heard about the hip hop witch. I hope the hip hop witch don't get me. And then they cut to someone else like saying something else completely different. Like everyone's got their own account of the hip hop witch. That's like 90% of the movie. It's just cutting to different people doing cameos, talking about how crazy the hip hop witch is. And then eventually it ends. So, guys, I could have watched Monkey Man this week. Could have watched First Omen. I had time to put in the Zone of Interest. I watched the hip hop witch. I couldn't tell you why. Everyone was talking about it on the Cinemax Facebook page. Like it just kind of, I think we do have Joseph Bridges to blame for this, right?
Yeah, to thank
Yeah.
or to
I
thank you,
believe
Joseph Bridges.
I believe well, thank. I mean, we thank you for the Artifice Girl. This is
This is
payback.
payback for the
But
life in
I know they
balance.
covered it on Middle Class Film Class. This is, you don't have to watch the whole movie. Just watch 10 minutes and you get it.
Okay.
And it's just that all the way through. Maybe skip to the end. And when I say the end, like the end, it's really bad, but kind of it's a thing, I guess, that happened.
Eric,
Yeah.
that's amazing. You're still trying to review this movie.
Yeah.
Zero stars? Zero
You
stars,
know,
Eric?
no, this
Yeah.
is a one-star banger. This is
Yeah, one
not a
star
good
banger.
movie, but I think
Okay.
I could see like the people that made this movie, like they would look back at that with nostalgia and go, oh yeah, I remember that was a piece of crap. We had fun making it. I think that's kind of where you get the one-star banger. Anyone else, you know, kind of like Lick the Evil. If I went back and watched Lick the Evil, it's like, oh, I remember making that. We had fun. If you guys watch it, it's like, Eric, what the hell is this piece of crap you made me watch? That's the Hip Hop Witch in a nutshell.
Wow.
Also mentioned real quick, because we already covered this, I want to say a year ago, but Los Angel, The Genius of Judy Sill, is finally coming out in select theaters and streaming on the 12th. So by the time you hear this, it's out. Bruce, I think you saw that. And pretty good music doc. You know, it's about Judy Sill, and she's I could have watched Judy Sill again, but I watched The Hip Hop Witch. But anyway, yeah. I just thought we should bring it up because I think we already covered it, but I
Yeah.
just wanted to bring it up again that it's coming out on the 12th. So if you want to watch music doc about an interesting person that's no longer with us, check out Los Angel, The Genius of Judy Sill.
All right. We will have, I will leave that on the show notes as well, where you can actually purchase ticket. What you said, it's on digital, right? So where you can actually get it as
It's
well.
not
So
out. It's not out as
April
we're
12th.
recording this, but by the time this comes out, yeah, it'll be out on the 12th, I think. Probably
Gotcha.
just check it. It'll probably be streaming everywhere at that point.
You have done so many interviews, Eric, and my head is swimming. All right, we are done with this mini episode from Cinematics. We will see you next week for Cinematics episode 238, and check out Eric's interviews in oh, yes, Bruce. Of
I want to interrupt you for just a moment
course.
before you send it off to the interviews. I was just curious, Eric, how many cinematic members would have to request it for you to release Lick the Evil to us? Because
I'd have to find it first.
I have a feeling there might be a hunger out there to watch that movie.
Yeah, it's so we did Lick the Evil, and then I think like a couple weeks later we did another one called The House of Phil Collins, and that was kind of the same thing. It was I think it was like Phil Collins turned into a ghost and was like possessing people. That was equally stupid. Lick the Evil is a papier mâché penis that's a master of disguise that goes around killing people, but then it turns into a it goes meta and turns into a behind the scenes thing.
So I'll just put the call out there. Let's see if there's a groundswell.
The problem is it I burned a couple of DVDs on it like back in early 2000s. I don't know where any of them are.
You'll
So
find out
if
eventually.
anyone's listening to this and you got one, then feel free to upload it to something, but just be warned, it's not good.
Wait. Before we sign off, how's this sauce is going? What's going on with the sauce?
Oh,
Oh,
it's pretty
yeah.
good. Making more of them and then keep selling out. Hopefully we got to figure out the. So I sent one of the sauces to Pete from Middle Class Film Class, and it made it there in pieces. So we got to figure out,
Oh,
and we got to
no.
figure out the shipping thing. Anderson hit me up with a couple ideas I got to check out, but like right now, like shipping it would be like $20, and the bottle of sauce is 10, so it doesn't quite make sense. So we got to figure
Yeah.
out cheaper pricing on that, but
Okay.
we're getting closer. And sure enough, when we're ready to, or if you're in Colorado Springs, just hit me up because I've been making like a bunch of different batches each week, and
There
they go
you
pretty quick.
go. All right, guys. Eric's secret sauce. Email him
I mean, that
hamslam@gmail.com.
costs extra.
That costs extra. The ham slime costs extra, folks. So, anyways, the secret sauce, Eric Holmes. He's batching a lot of stuff. Bruce, unfortunately, does not have sauces going on, but he has some movie recommendations. BruceBerkey@gmail.com for what's in the box recommendations. We're going to sign off right now for Eric's interviews. Eric, you wanted to say something before we left?
I was going to say all my sauces got 6.9 star reviews, so
Oh, very good. Very good. All right. Now, here are Eric's interviews, and thanks again for supporting us here on Cinematics.
How you doing,
and,
Eric?
Not bad. And it's Alexis Gambis or Gambies?
It's Gambis. Yeah, it's a
okay.
French name. We have odd consonants that we pronounce and we don't pronounce, but it's Alexi Gambis. Yeah. How are you,
Okay.
Eric?
Oh, not bad. I'm here with Alexi Gambis, creator of Labo Cine. Labo
Yeah, Labo
Cine.
Cine. Yeah, like
I'm
cinema.
screwing up all the words.
No, no worries.
So this is a very interesting interview. Because usually I get like a screener for a movie, but this is not what we're here to talk about today. It's about a streaming service and an ambitious one, sounding at that. I guess we'll start with what is Labo Cine and what can you tell us about it? Because it's kind of a neat sort of what do you call it, mission statement on this one.
Yeah, so Labo Cine is a streaming platform that's trying to basically bridge sort of scientific ideas and cinema. And so the idea is really to kind of break the sort of divide between how we think about science and also the many ways in which science can be brought into film. But I think more broadly, the platform, as it's sort of the term Labo Cine, is sort of a laboratory of cinema. And so the idea is to really talk about sort of the research and sort of the ecosystem that goes behind making films in general. So, you know, if you make a film and make a documentary, you may have a biologist, you may have a filmmaker, you may have an animator. And so the platform is trying to kind of elevate sort of the many different types of people that that come together, that are stitched together to make this film. And to some extent, we're trying to, you know, disrupt a little bit the streaming world. Like, you know, when you go to Netflix or HBO, it's very much about watching the film. But we also want to kind of emphasize, in this case, you know, the people that are involved in making these films.
Kind of like the DVD with the movie and the special features, and this is kind of all that in one.
Yes, well, actually, Eric, you're mentioning something really key to the platform, because one of the things that we just launched a few weeks ago is called Field Notes. And so that's basically the idea of like bonus features on a DVD. So if you're a filmmaker and you have a film on the platform, you can upload like an article, you can upload, you know, like a DVD commentary about your film, you can upload images. And I think it's really important for, especially in sciences, because, you know, we just want to show that there are many ways of telling science stories. You know, obviously there's films like Oppenheimer, you know, like Nolan's film. There's documentaries, there's experimental work, but there's also the work that's coming out of the actual laboratories, you know, like scientific footage. And so the idea is every month we have a topic. Right now it's about the brain, and we'll show you science fiction, we'll show you animation, we'll show you documentaries. We'll show you like films that are like the Oscar nominated film Eternal Memory about Alzheimer's disease, but we'll also show you short films, a music video from Japan, and also showing you the many different cultures, right? The many different places in the world that are making these types of films. So that's sort of the mission of it. And of course, this is part of the movement called the Science New Wave.
You think like something, what you're doing here, like, you know, usually the scientists will come up with a hypothesis theory, do their tests and whatnot, and then they'll put out the abstract with everything that they did. You think maybe perhaps a short film or feature length film or documentary of their process could maybe take place of the written form, as far as like, here, let me just film what I've done for this test, and you can peer review it on your own if you like.
Yeah, so we are trying to sort of be to so the idea is that we're both like entertainment, right? So the idea is like showing films and getting people inspired and sort of celebrating storytelling in cinema, but we also want to sort of document scientific research and to some extent. So the idea is that we flip it basically. So like if you have like an article, if you're a scientist and you have an article, well, we want to see the videos that you're generating, right? So the videos are the key part of it. So if you're doing simulations in astrophysics, if you're trying to like do work in quantum physics or brain imagery, that's what we highlight. And then field notes would lead you to the articles and to other types of information around the films. But the idea is to combine both of those worlds, right? To combine a fiction movie like Oppenheimer and the scientific research so that people understand that this is all visual material. And this is all addressing one specific topic. In this case, the March issue is about the brain, but that's sort of the goal, is to kind of break that divide.
And looking at the website, you have like a bunch of different filmmakers and a bunch of different scientists. Filmmaker, like getting a hold of filmmakers for something like this makes sense. How do you get a hold of the scientists and how do they collaborate with the filmmakers? How do you know like who to get with who to put them together?
Right, it's a very good point. A scientist, when they're sharing video, they're always worried about, for example, once their video goes beyond like the laboratory, because scientists are always worried about publishing, about also like how their material is going to be, potentially used or misconstrued, or like how it's going to get out to the public. But at the same time, many scientists are really interested in sort of entering into artistic spaces, and to let them know that their film is going to be part of a film issue that is devoted to the brain, and it's going to be along these other films, they get really excited, right? And so it's really just about curation. Like, we go through many different festivals. We have our own festival, which happens in October, called the Science New Wave Festival. And so we start curating, if the topic is around extinction, or if it's about the brain, or if it's about our February issue was about the KISS, the cinematography, like how kisses have been documented in cinema. And we invite them, we invite them, we let them know that their film is going to be there for 30 days for the month of whatever month we're selecting. And but our goal, and you make a good point, is to get scientists to be more comfortable entering into these film environments, right? Because we not only want scientists to be advisors and mentors on these films, but we want them to be actively involved in making films. And I think it's really important. You'll notice that many of the big shows on TV, I don't know, like Breaking Bad or The Big Bang Theory, or the films that were at the Oscars, like Oppenheimer, you'll notice that people are really interested in these topics. And so I think it's really important.
What kind of curation do you have with this? Is this just anyone who wants anything, or like, do you kind of maybe put the brakes on any sort of like crystal healing sort of thing, or?
Yeah. So basically, the Science New Wave, which is sort of the movement that's behind all of this, we celebrate the many forms, so it can be science fiction, it can be animation, documentary. But the important aspect is there's a submission process, right? Like, people submit films, we review them. We definitely want to make sure that, you're not falsifying data, or you're not sort of misconstruing, or you're not sort of exaggerating like the stereotypes that exist about scientists, like the mad scientist. We're
Love
trying to break these conventions. And so, there's a team, like a selection committee, that watches these films, and we think about these what I just mentioned, these criteria for the selection, but we're also thinking about it in relationship to the issue. Like, does it fit what we're trying to do with this particular issue? But we show pretty amazing, crazy content, from like a music videos to experimental films to documentaries. So the scope is pretty broad.
There was a movie just came out, The Late Night with the Devil, and there's a James Randi character, and he's like just a complete like straw man argument of what a skeptic like that would be about. And so it's kind of refreshing that there's at least a place for now that kind of seems to go against something like that.
Yeah, and my own work is that, right? I mean, I'm a filmmaker, I'm a biologist turned filmmaker, and my films are really about portraits of scientists that are also immigrants, that are also dealing with personal issues, but where the science, my last film, which is about a butterfly scientist who turns into a butterfly to cross the border between US and Mexico, is all about like combining the research with notions about immigration, about identity, about who we are. And so I think it's really important to understand that when you're a scientist, as being an artist, you're very passionate about what you do, and there's more than just the research. You're doing it because it resonates with aspects about who you are. So
Is there any sort of plans to, because obviously this is a streaming service, but like to get any of the movies into theaters before going onto the streaming service or expanding that way?
yeah, do you know the platform Mubi, right? Mubi. Yeah, we have like a similar sort of aspirations as Mubi, where we are definitely very, very sort of. So Mubi has something called Mubi Go, which is basically, encouraging people to go to the movie theaters, and when they go to the movie theaters, they basically also have access to the platform. We have our own festival, which happens. So one of the ideas of the Science New Wave, which is the movement and the festival, is we want to bring science into cinemas, and we also want to bring science into many different types of venues. You see what I mean? So like we want to bring it out of like, so we want to bring it into bars, into movie theaters, into public spaces. So we do it already with the festival, where the festival happens, and then some of those films end up on the platform. But you're like in the midst of like talking to different venues about kind of collaborating and giving access. And you know, the other thing is, if you're in a university or if you're at a museum and you have access to the platform, we encourage these places to basically organize screenings and exhibits and installation, because I think it's really important to not only show the many ways of science filmmaking, but to also show the many ways in which you can project it, right? Like in different venues. So yeah.
So we have a what's in the box segment, and typically in the box we have a bunch of movies and we have people put movies in that they think are underseen or were really personal. But since I'm talking to you and talking about Labo sending, maybe we'll go a different route with that. What's a movie on the streaming service that you would like to put in the box that you think is really representative of the streaming platform, and another movie that's not on Labo sending that you think would be a good fit there that maybe a lot of people may have not seen?
Yeah, so in the March issue and the one about the brain, that the for this particular issue, Eric. Yeah, so there's a beautiful film. I mean, it's gotten a lot of exposure because it was an Oscar nominated documentary. It's called The Eternal Memory. It's a Spanish film about a Chilean couple that are basically, one of them is going through Alzheimer's disease, and it's really about sort of not only about the disease itself, but also about love and about relationship and about kind of tracking. And I think that film is one of the films that really sort of exemplifies the combination of understanding a disease like Alzheimer's, like a neurodegenerative disease, but also understanding how it affects personal stories. That would be something that I would highlight as being in the box. In terms of a film that a recent film.
It can be anything. Just like another movie that's not currently on Labocine, but that would be a great fit for that.
One of my favorite films of all times, and I tell people like I consider it to be a science film, and then I have like arguments because everybody has like different ideas of what it is this film from the 70s called The Spirit of the Beehive. It's a Spanish film also, and it's about a little girl that watches Frankenstein in like a public space, and she becomes terrified about the idea of death, and she starts seeing Frankenstein in her father, like in the landscapes. And it's a film that really kind of delves into mortality, but also her father's a beekeeper, so he basically takes care of bees. And so it's this really beautiful allegory about mortality, about beekeeping. And it's a film that in a way summarizes what my work and summarizes also the very notion of what the Science New Wave is. It's sort of like a mixture of magical realism, science, personal storytelling, and growth. So yeah.
All right. Well, haven't heard of either one of those, so or haven't seen any either of those. So those are great picks. Yeah, I would implore anyone to check out Labocine, Labocine.com. And I'm sure we have a bunch of people watching our show that are filmmakers themselves. I'm sure they can go there. We have the submission process for any short. Oh, I guess I should end with that. Would the submission be for completed films, or do you guys develop them as well?
Yeah, we have both submissions for completed films, but also works in progress. So the whole idea of like field notes that we mentioned is, if you want to submit like a work in progress and you want to just kind of like announce that this film is in progress, we also accept works in progress. Of course, for the actual streaming aspect, the films have to be completed. And once your film is part of the platform, once you sort of join the platform, you're basically a Science New Wave member, and being a Science New Wave member means that you're part of this movement. You know, it's like we consider it as like a film movement, the Science New Wave. So a little bit inspired by the French New Wave, the idea is to break conventions and stereotypes around scientists and science. And so I think you, Eric, are already part of the science new wave. So
Woohoo!
no, but it's pretty exciting because it's, you know, I think film movements help you also like organize, you know, like kind of it's almost like a campaign around it. You know, it's like the French New Wave and Mumblecore and Dogma 95. So,
Yeah,
but yeah, I'm very happy to have you in the Science New Wave, Eric.
I'm happy to be here, and I'm happy to have you as part of the cinematics.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for coming out, and yeah, everyone check out labocine.com. And this is a really cool idea, and I really hope it takes off, and everyone, the people that need to find it, find it, and some of the people that don't need to find it as well. But thank you for joining me, Alexi.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And get ready for the next issue is about the eclipse. So it'll be pretty exciting.
It's Zarar Khan, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
All right, I'm here with Zarar Khan, the writer and director of In Flames. I guess first I'll start off. This was selected as Pakistan's entry to the Best International Feature. What's the process like getting a movie to that point? I'm sure there's voting or something needs to be done, but is there like submissions or because I've never had the opportunity to ask anyone about that before.
It's challenging. It kind of starts with every country has their own committee. First, you share it with the country. So our committee was chaired by Mo Nuqvi, who's an incredible filmmaker who currently has a series on Netflix. That committee for Pakistan consists of like artists. So it really varies, and you know, in Canada, it's a mixture of artists and government officials. And so it depends on what the shape of that committee looks like. So for us, it's largely independent artists who are the backbone of the Pakistan film industry, and they selected our film from a pool of a few different films that were vying for that spot. And then once we had that, we have like it's kind of like. Someone is holding a gun and sets off the race. And then, in order to actually make the qualify for the academy, they have like this huge list of rules that you have to do to actually qualify once your country has nominated you. One of those is a domestic theatrical tour, or now they've opened that just to a theatrical tour because there's now, you know, films are sometimes being banned. So, like, once we got the news, we were like, oh, and then we had to theatrically release, and we wanted to theatrically release in Pakistan. So it was like immediately going to the censor board, trying to get censor clearances, looking for a distributor in Pakistan, not finding one because the film is quite challenging for a more conservative audience. But, you know, me and my producer, Anuman Bas, insisting that we're going to make sure this film gets seen in Pakistan. So we became distributors and we released the film in two cities in seven different cinemas. Once we were able to tick that off, then the Academy has a whole bunch of other kind of regulations to qualify and just making sure we're kind of like making our way through that checklist. So we're able to be in the Academy screening room, which is where voters go and review films. It's like this app that they have. I don't know if you know about this. It's like Netflix for Academy voters, where they can just watch every single film that's been nominated at like the click of a button on their phone. And so yeah, it was a crazy and then I toured with the film to promote it with For Your Consideration screenings in LA and New York. So that was wild.
How do you determine whether this is a Pakistani film or a Canadian film, or just movies in general that are not just of one origin?
I mean, that's tricky and it's becoming increasingly trickier as like films are even more so. Like our film was two countries producing it. You know, you have films that have like 11 countries attached, and that's often the norm. So with this, we felt like the film spoke to Pakistani culture and values. And so we wanted to be Pakistan's nominee. So we could have, because the film was largely financed out of Canada, submitted through Canada, but we felt like it made more sense for this film to come via Pakistan.
Given the movie itself, the content within the movie, I feel like it buried the lead, but I was very curious about all that stuff. With this, for instance, you'll do a movie or story about a bad cop, and someone's always quick to say not all cops. In the case of this one, we'll say the patriarchy is the antagonist, but just men in general are the antagonists. And a lot of times with stuff like that, you'll have people come in and say not all men. And usually those people are the ones you're most worried about. Like, what's kind of been your response to maybe people like that? Or have you not, have you been,
We've definitely had that feedback. I mean, it's part of making a film that's divisive. I think with this film, I really wanted to more speak about like the structure and the way that the society operates, both through legislation, but also through violence. When we have that conversation, I'm the first to ask, like, have you watched the film? Because in the film, we have characters who are good men who are as good as they can be within the society that they operate in. And I feel like everyone is a product of a place. And you're only going to be as good as what's expected of you in that society. And that's what this film speaks to. So that's been my response. I think critical engagement is good. And I knew when we were making this film, it's a film that's going to stir the pot. And I don't mind poking the bear sometimes.
What's been your personal experience? Because people don't usually kind of pick this subject matter out of thin air.
I mean, I work in Pakistan for the last 10 years, and I met many incredible women who decided to work in the film industry, which globally is male dominated, and hearing their journeys into the industry, hearing about how they navigate and how what they have to navigate is so different from myself. It infuriated me. And what this film speaks to is, systematic oppression of an entire gender and how those systems of oppression operate on many different levels. And I think when you think about systems and how they oppress individuals, you can see kind of threads across different societies. And that's really what I hope global audiences take away from this. And so far they have. So I think that's been a really interesting journey for me to see this film play in like Busan or play at Red Sea and get very visceral responses.
First of all, I'm always interested in people's writing process to begin with. But when you're writing the screenplay for this and you go to shoot it, like what kind of changes, or even in earlier drafts, like how was that different than the final version?
I mean, I'm a deeply collaborative writer, and I tend to cast at an early stage and find people who are not only playing significant roles, but I often view them as collaborators and get notes from them from the characters that they're going to be playing. And that was part of my process with this film, where I made a short film in 2018 that also had Bakhtawar Muzer, who played the role of Fariha in the feature. She was the mom. She was giving me feedback on drafts, and that really informed the mother-daughter relationship and her character. I think as a writer-director, what I think I can do is amplify people's journeys, amplify their stories, and frame it through, cinema, because cinema is like a way to walk in someone's shoes that you've never experienced before. It's a way to travel. During COVID, all I was doing was watching foreign films because I was tired of being trapped at home. So once we had that draft, which was our second draft, that was really close to the shooting script. I had an initial draft that was pretty bad between you and me, and I ended up doing a page one rewrite. Then once we had our second draft, that was basically our shooting script. Then I'll often like workshop dialogue more through table reads with the cast, then keep stripping it down and whittling it down to what's the truest version of it. And then when we're on set, there's not a ton of space for improvisation.
Yeah. I kind of want to hang out. You said the first draft was really bad, and I kind of want to have you speak on that a little bit more, because I think a lot of people that aren't writers that would like to be writers are hung back because it's like, I'm not that good. I don't think they understand that, no, you need to get the crap out early, and then you can fix it later.
I mean, you just need to. I think everyone starts off with like an intention and wanting to create something. And the hardest thing is to just sit down and put piece to paper and have a script, And once you have a script and you have all of your initial ideas out, like I call it like you're vomiting out all of these initial ideas. And once you have it on a paper, you can reflect on it. It's been the same process for me on my new film as well, where I had a script. And then I did a page one rewrite again, and I had to throw that script away and start from scratch. But it allows me to really clarify what's working and what's not working in a way that if I never wrote that script, that initial bad script, I wouldn't know. So I think as a filmmaker, the best thing you can do is just do the work.
So, at what point did the story have the, we'll say, the genre elements to it, or did it start off like that and then become the more social element to it?
They were both there from the start because, Pakistan's deeply religious, but also, as most religious societies are, superstitious. These characters, the way that they view the world is through the lens of the supernatural walking with them. So, and it's how they frame kind of both the joys as well as the horrors that they experience are from, a greater power. It just made sense to me to have it be deeply embedded within the journey that they're on. And simultaneously, I'm a sucker for what genre cinema does and what it's historically done, how it's always been a political space, and also what it's doing today with contemporary creators like Matty Diop, Julia Ducournau, Jordan Peele, how they're keeping cinema exciting by taking genre, which is often the most visceral experience you can have, and framing it through perspectives we haven't seen before.
And mentioned earlier about the people that may look at this and be on the defensive, but have you had the other, I'm sure you have, but what are some other reactions to this on the more positive side? Like, oh my God, you nailed this, or oh, I've had this much trouble with stuff that's happened in this movie, and it's good seeing someone express that on screen.
I mean, it's not a movie where people walk out and they're like, oh my God,
Well,
it definitely was more like, I think the way I could describe it was we had a screening at Palm Springs. I came out of the cinema after the Q&A and there was a young woman who was just kind of sitting there crying. And she was waiting to talk to me. She pulled me aside and, she's like, this film really speaks to a lot of the things that I've experienced that I've never seen it conveyed so viscerally on screen. And, she was really grateful because the film at the end of the day is speaking to resistance, it's speaking to resilience, it's speaking to survival. And I think that's what's needed as the world continues to tilt.
We have a What's in the Box segment on the show, and we have in the box we have a bunch of movies in there, and each week we'll pull one out and watch for the following week. But we have people put movies into the box. These are movies that are either personal to you or a movie that's like really good and just no one ever talks about or for some reason is underseen. What's a movie you'd like to put into the box?
I'm gonna say it's a film that's really close to me, as Happy as Lazaro. Yeah. By what's her name? One second.
Said
It's like a
happy as Lazaro.
yeah. It is by Alice Roche Washer, who I'm probably butchering that name, but it's a modern fairy tale set in the Italian countryside, and it's magical. But also very, very real. And it's best experienced in a theater if you can. But if not, watch it any way you can.
Yeah, we may be forced to watch it on streaming or physical or
Man,
whatever we
that's
can.
how I've been consuming movies predominantly. But I'm lucky now. I moved to Toronto recently, so I'm just surrounded by cinemas. And we have this great like points card, so I go to the cinema more often than not now. But yeah, when I was in Pakistan, I was just that was how I was watching movies on my laptop.
Did they tend to play like a? It would be a miracle if a movie like I'm looking at on
Where
IMDb
are
now,
you?
Colorado Springs. They're not playing this in a theater near me anytime soon. So that's what I'm saying. Like that would be a miracle if that happened. But
Oh, okay, Monkey Man. Monkey Man is out soon. Go watch it.
all right. Oh no, I'm still gonna track down Happy Lizard. I'm saying
Okay.
to see that in a theater. I don't think
Yeah.
I'd be able to.
Yeah. I feel you.
Yeah, In Flames comes out in theaters in US and Canada April 12th, and I would definitely hope everyone would watch this. It's a very great movie, and congratulations.
Thank you. Thanks so much, man. Thanks for having me.